Guys, already fifth graders, you can be dismissed. This morning, I want to do a living room sermon. If I were sitting in my living room talking to some teenagers, what would I say? So that's this morning. My daughter yesterday just blew my mind. I was in the house. My in-laws came over to see this last night, and they got there. We're sitting in the kitchen, we're talking, and I thought, man, it's cold in this house. And it was cold. We had, that's okay, just leave it. We'll go without those. Don't worry, we're good. A little something that we had. And my daughter, I thought, it's awful cold. And I don't usually get cold. So I went to the thermostat, and it was set at 45 degrees. And by the way, that's about as low as it can get. Thank you. And that's about as low as it can get in the house. And so I thought, who in the world reset the thermostat? So I went in the kitchen. I said, who reset this thermostat? And my two daughters were sitting there, and Jackie just started laughing. She thought it was hilarious that it was 45. And I said, oh, you did this. And she says, I didn't do it. And she's laughing, so I don't even know if she's joking or if I can believe it. She goes, I can't help but laugh. I didn't do it, but I'm laughing. You're making me laugh. I said, it's 45 degrees, the thermostat. Are you kidding me? She goes, I didn't do it. And my seven-year-old said, Daddy, I reset the thermostat. It was me. And she had that tone that you couldn't really get mad. And of course, the grandparents are just cracking up. They're loving this. And I said, why in the world? You know you're not supposed to touch the thermostat. That's not allowed. She says, but Daddy, I had to. I said, for what? She said, my igloo. I said, what? She goes, outside she'd made an igloo. She brought it in the house. She didn't want it to melt. And so she said, but that's as cold as I could make it. It wouldn't go any further. And I'm trying not to laugh. She brought an igloo in the house. And she said, I wanted the house to be the same temperature as outside. And I'm thinking, this is great for a seven-year-old. That's her thinking. I need a couple volunteers to help me out here. Just raise your hand. Okay, there's one. Would you hold on to this for me? Where's my other one? Here, Curtis. Come and get these. Hold on to those for me, would you? I'll need those in just a second. One more there, John. Okay, just hold on to that for me. There we go. Thanks. Just keep holding that's my daughter's igloo. If you mess it up, she's not going to be happy. I brought it to church this morning. What can I say to teenagers? I'm a senior pastor, but I'm really a youth pastor dressed in senior pastor clothing. I've been doing youth work for 20 years of my life, and I still am. I told Pastor Kevin, I said, we're partners in this. You're not the youth pastor. You're a pastor at a church. And I said, I'm not just a senior pastor, but I am the youth's pastor as well. And we are both pastors in this together. And as I thought about my daughter, it reminded me of three things, three numbers that changed my heart. And those numbers are 86, 91, and 8 out of 10. 86% of people in America claim that they're born-again Christians, that they love the Lord. That's almost 9 out of 10 kids. 86 out of every 100 kids claim that they love the Lord. 91% is a number that changed my life when I heard about it a few years ago. George Barna, in his research, asked people all over the country, teenagers included, do you believe in truth? And 91%, not of the country, of Christians, said, no, we don't believe in absolute truth. 9 out of 10 kids do not believe that there is such a thing as truth. We got a problem. 8 out of 10 kids, 8 out of 10, that's the third number, changed my life. 8 out of 10 kids will say, within 1 year of graduating high school and going to university, 8 out of 10 kids will walk completely away from their faith. 8 out of 10 Christians will walk away from God. It's true. It happens in your homes. It happens in pastors' homes. Kids walk away from God. So I was thinking about this story that these kids are telling, this comedy, and I said, if I could sit down in the living room and have a talk with you kids, so this morning I'd like to talk to you as your youth pastor. as your pastor, that's kind of hidden deep down inside here. I still have a heart. I believe in you. I believe you have a message. And I believe that the reason that 86% of kids or people who come to Christ do so before the age of 18. I don't know if you know that. Most people who come to Christ will do so at a young age. You know why? Because once we start getting older, we get set in our ways. We become too smart for it. And it's just not the same. And we have a hard time with it. Meshach, Shadrach, and Abednego were three teenagers just like you guys. These three teenagers, they were thrown into a culture that wasn't their own. And they had three questions that they asked. Young people, there's three questions that you're asking that your moms and dads ask too. And they may have answered it a little bit differently. But here's the three questions. The first ones, and Meshach, Shadrach, and Abednego did too. The first one is they wanted to know, where did I come from? Well, these three Hebrew boys, they knew where they came from. They came from a Jewish nation that loved God with all their heart. The Shema that they would recite every morning when they would wake up. The great Shema. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God. The Lord our God is one. Every morning. They would shout. Now they're in captivity in a place that some of your husbands are at. A place called Baghdad today. Then it was Babylon. Same place. Same exact place. And they're thrust into the middle of that. And they're told, do not say, hear, O Israel, the Lord our God. The Lord our God is one. And so young people, the first question I know is on your mind is, where do we come from? And can I tell you, there's a message out there that is asking you to bow down. And some of us, unfortunately, have bowed down to and we've handed it to you. And we answer the question, it's either evolution or it's creation. We ask, where did we come from? And the first message is, did we come from, hear, O Israel, hear the Lord our God, the Lord our God is one. We say, no, you came from a single cell amoeba in some kind of protoplasm or something in a pond 4 billion years ago by a giant accident. And somehow, after millions of years, you evolved into a tadpole and then into a fish. And then after gills, you found a way to grow legs. And then after legs. And folks, this sounds ridiculous. I'm not making this up. It's in the textbooks. And so, hear, O Israel, no, we answered the question, where did we come from? And the answer is, we did not come from God. We came from an accident over billions of years. And we have to answer that question this morning. And I want to let you know that you don't have to bow down, and the pressure is great. You know how great the pressure is even for me as a pastor this morning to say something like this? There's a chance that in the audience this morning, even in church, there are people going, come on, pastor, are you really going to talk about this? I mean, after all, maybe God just made the evolution happen. And I have to tell you, you are not reading my Bible, and that is not my God. So while that may be a little bit harsh to swallow, if we can't even talk about it in church because we're afraid to bow down, then no wonder why our kids are bowing down to it and saying, that's ridiculous. Don't talk about that. Just let it go. Let's talk about Jesus and God, but don't talk about where we came from. What difference does that make? Young people, right here in my living room, I'll tell you what difference it makes. Because if you don't know where you came from, then it doesn't matter what you're doing, and who cares where you're going? Because if there's no idea of a creator, then you don't have to worry about consequences. My kids at an early age learned that you have to bow down to this stuff to get a good grade. You have to bow down to this stuff or your teachers will shun you. It was in fourth grade that we got a phone call from a teacher, and also our kids were coming home and talking about this, and I'll never forget, because we taught them that God created them, and they said, what about this evolution stuff? And it happened as early as fourth grade. And I remember one of our sons coming home, and I said, what happened today in school? And he said, oh, it was great. Today in school, we were talking about dinosaurs. Daddy, dinosaurs are 500 million years old. I said, where did you get that garbage? Well, because it's in our textbooks, scientists have taught us that. I said, scientists have taught us that. I said, go ask your teacher. And so I set it up with my son, and I taught him some science. And he went back to school and shared science. And asked the question, how do we know dinosaurs are 500, it was Tyrannosaurus rexes, which they loved, and, you know, the big meat eaters. And they said, how do we, and so I said, go ask your teacher. And this is what they will say because it's in the textbook. And then you ask this question and find out now how do you answer it scientifically. And so the question was, how do we know that Tyrannosaurus rexes are 500 million years old? And they said, because we found them in the Jurassic layer of the earth. And the Jurassic layer of the earth is 500 million years old. I said, perfect. Now ask the second question. How do we know the Jurassic era is 500 million years old? And they answered it, because we found Tyrannosaurus rexes in that layer. To which my son answered, isn't that cyclical reasoning? To which the teacher went, what? My daddy's a pastor, and he said, it is. We proved the layer of the earth by the dinosaur, and the dinosaur by the layer of the earth. It's great logic if you want a religion. And Webster defines religion as this. And the answer to my children, all of my children have had this answer at least once in their lifetime in school, is, oh, keep your religion, I know your dad's a pastor, but keep your religion out of the classroom. That has been an answer. Bow down and accept what we're teaching you. When the music plays, look, there's an image. And so, young people, listen to me. You don't have to bow down. I don't care how much pressure there is, because you can't have cyclical reasoning. The guy who came up, by the way, with the layers of the earth and the age, I heard it the other day, the earth is 4 billion years old. And I thought, there's nobody been around 4 billion years ago. How do they know this stuff? And here's how they did it. There was a guy in about 1859 that came up with a thing called the geological column. And he layered the different parts of the earth. We use that still today in our textbooks. Do you know that he did not have the science to do this? He just simply said, these are the layers and here it is. And by the way, if you stack all the layers that we have together today in the geological column, it's 100 miles deep. We haven't dug more than 5 miles, okay, going into the earth. So don't tell me that we've studied 100 miles deep and we've got dinosaurs there. We don't. And so it's not even scientific. And by the way, Webster defines religion as this. Religion is anything that teaches the beginning or the existence of mankind. Religion is, by definition, according to Webster's Collegiate Volume 1 Dictionary, the teaching and the supposition that anything that deals with the beginning of mankind and the origin of life. We are teaching religion, just not this religion. We're teaching religion that is cyclical. And so I taught my kids a few things, and by 10th grade, my son got to go in and teach a class, to which the teacher said, fine, you take the class, and he did. And he brought in a firecracker, a watch, and a Tupperware, and they got to light it in class and have this whole thing about the chaos theory, saying, from a Big Bang, because they were talking about Big Bang, and he says, I disagree with it. Well, we know you disagree with it. Well, God created everything in 6 days. Well, no, God didn't create everything in 6 days. That's your religion. No, no, no. You're teaching a religion, so let's have equal religion. Well, fine, you come in and teach a class. So he got to teach a class. And they went to the chalkboard, they brought this stuff in and brought an old watch that he took of mine, and he got to rip it apart, which he really enjoyed. And he said, this is it, Dad. And I said, go for it. And he went into class, him and his buddy from across the street, and they taught their science class about Big Bangs and the chaos theory. From a Big Bang, you do not get order and structure. From a Big Bang, you get chaos. And they showed that from the watch. He says, I don't care how many firecrackers or M80s we put in this Tupperware with these pieces of this watch. You're telling me that we didn't even have the pieces of the watch, but we got a bang, and out of that we got something better than this watch. It's impossible. It's not even your scientific theory of the first law of thermodynamics teaches the exact opposite. Chaos is chaos. Randomness. Energy goes to randomness. And he's teaching this. And a lot of the students around said, where did you learn this? He said, it's science, and my dad's a preacher. And the teacher said, oh, okay, very nice. I had another student, quietest girl in the world, and she went into her class. She was sharing this stuff, and she got so ostracized by her teacher. Her teacher finally told everybody in the class to leave the room and go to recess at West High School in Waterloo, Iowa. They don't have recess. She was so flustered in the argument, she just dismissed the class and said, leave and go outside and take a recess. And she sat with this girl, Carissa, and she said, I don't know who you think you are, but you need to stop disrupting my class. And she says, I can't when you're teaching stuff like this. And she said, you will learn this stuff because that's what we're teaching, or you will not pass this class. And this was a 4.0 student. By her sophomore year, she was taking collegians classes and almost had her degree by her senior year. Very smart student. And she said, you think you're so smart. The teacher said, you think you're so smart. Tell you what, you show up next week, you teach this class. She said, okay. She called me on the phone. We need to meet. I'm teaching the class. I said, this is great. What are you going to teach on? She says, I don't know. I said, you know this stuff. You're just shy. She got and taught it. And afterwards, even the teacher said, where did you get this? She took it from the textbook in other places and brought her argument around to be scientific instead of religious. And the teacher said, you've got to be kidding me. The teacher said, you've got to be kidding me. Listen, you don't have to bow down. What difference does it make whether you believe in evolution or whether you believe in creation? What difference does that make today? Oh, no difference at all, except this. When kids start acting like animals, are we surprised that we've taught them to act like animals and then they do it? Why are we so surprised? When a kid goes onto a campus at West Virginia with a gun and starts shooting people, why should we be surprised if we teach survival of the fittest? Now, I'm going to start speaking illogically here, but this is actually out of the textbook. Survival of the fittest said the strongest survive. Why feed anybody in Africa when they're the weakest? They die off. That's what evolution says in the survival of the fittest. Why would we help one another? Why have a police officer to protect weak people from strong people who can kick down doors? The logic says if we're evolving, let the weak die off and only the strong should survive. But we don't honestly believe that. In our heart of hearts, we are compassionate people. And in our heart of hearts and in our spirits, you know what we do, young people? We do not bow down to evolution. What's ironic is we teach this and then the paradox is then we go overseas and we help humankind and we have the largest welfare system in the entire world because we believe in helping people. We want to help people. But then we teach the opposite. So we're sitting in my living room this morning, and my heart is broken. No wonder why kids, young people, you're so confused. Do not bow down. I believe this with all of my heart. In Genesis 1:1, it says, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And everything that I see shows me that. I gave you the definition of religion. Here's the definition of science. Observable, empirical evidence. Observable, empirical evidence. It means I can see it, empirical. It's always the same and it never changes. Evidence. And I thought, perfect. Young people, Romans chapter 1 says this, that God has shown who he is through his invisible qualities and his eternal powers. For since the foundation of the world, God has made himself known through what has been created. That's Romans chapter 1. I can wake up every morning and see science. Every time the sun rises, that's not an accident. It's in its perfect place. Young people, you want science and you want evidence? Here's the science and evidence. We are not evolving. We haven't had a single animal change to a single animal. My kids, I've taught them a little thing called symbiotic relationships, which just blows my mind. I said, let's imagine that somewhere a billion years ago, we evolved. A man somehow came from another life form. If that happened, and the odds of that happening, could you imagine the idea that somewhere something stood up and said, all right, give me a cell phone and a BMW. Something somewhere stood up to become a man. Symbiotic relationship says, completely separated from that, somewhere in this world, in some kind of plasma pond, something was happening at the exact simultaneous time as that was happening, and somehow something evolved completely separated. That's symbiotic, completely separated. Symbiotic relationship grew up and said, I'll be a woman because he's testosterone. I need to be estrogen. And somewhere, it didn't just evolve once. It evolved twice at the exact same time over 4 billion years. What are the odds that these two on this planet found each other? I can't even find half the things I'm looking for in Chicago or driving on a road trip. This man and this woman on this planet evolved separately, realizing somehow in their minds, since he's a testosterone, I need to be an estrogen, and we're going to have kids so we can start what's called the human race. Nobody's even talking about that. And then if they didn't find each other, it had to happen again. So we should find millions of these things all over the planet. Not a single one. Observable, empirical evidence. But you know what I see? I see moms and dads. This past week, I went to the hospital, and a mom and dad had a beautiful baby, a beautiful son. And it was a mom and a dad and a human being. They had a baby. You know what? I've got a dog. That dog's going to have a puppy. There has not been one observable evidence of something turning into something. And the reason I say that is because it says in Genesis 1:27, and God made every creature according to its own kind. And according to their kinds, He made them. And then He made them male and He made them female. And if you want a religion, I'll give you a religion. It's called Christianity and Jesus Christ. And it's a great explanation for me. And if you want a science, I'll give you a science. It's called Jesus Christ and Christianity. And it's a great science. Because I observe it every single day. So young people, you want to know where you came from? It's important to know where you came from. Because then you know I'm not just an accident on a planet waiting for a coincidence to be something. You're not just an accident on a planet waiting for a coincidence just to happen. In my living room, I tell my kids, God has a plan for your life. He created you. Look at me, every young person. If I could see your eyes, I want you to know something. God didn't just let you happen. No matter your home life, your situation, anything going on, He thought of you for a long, long, long time. And He spent lots of detail putting and forming you together. The Bible says before the foundations of the world, He was thinking of you. And when He formed you together, Psalm 139 says, you were knit together in your mother's womb. You were put together as a tapestry, as one of the greatest creations that He ever made. When He was done with everything else, He said, good. When He was making you, He said, very good. Know this, He made you special. There is a plan for you. You are not an accident. You are not spinning at 770 miles an hour on an axis, going through outer space at 82,000 miles per second with nobody at the driver's helm. He is in control of your life. He knows you completely and has a plan for your life. God knows you, and He loves you desperately. We need to know that Meshach and Shadrach and Abednego were told, bow down, forget about your past and where you came from. Do not forget your past and do not bow down. And the second question we just talked about, why am I here? The reason that you're here is that God has a plan for you. Nebuchadnezzar made an idol of gold that was 90 feet tall. Do you know how much that would cost today? Imagine a 90-foot statue, solid gold. Gold, I think, runs about $450 an ounce right now on the market. I heard it a couple weeks ago. It was 400 and something. It fluctuates. $400 an ounce. This thing is 90 feet tall, solid gold. Bow down to solid gold? We live in a society that bows down to solid gold every day. Do not bow down to solid gold. When you're teenagers, I'll give you the P's for the idolatry pyramid. Here's the idolatry pyramid. When we're teenagers, we bow down to popularity. Jonathan, you shared that. People bow down to popularity. I just want to be accepted. Teenagers, I understand the number one thing right now is peers. That's teenagers. Wait till you're in your 20s. You 20-year-olds, it's party. Everything's gone wild. You know, Daytona gone wild. Girls gone wild. Guys gone wild. Animals gone wild. Cell phones gone wild. Bills gone wild. Everything's gone wild. In the 20s, we bow down to the party. It's a big party. In the 30s, we change. We become much more refined. In the 30s, we don't bow down to all those things. In the 30s, we bow down to possessions. We got to have the big TVs. We got to have the cable. We got to have the car. We got to have the Jeep. We got to have the toys. We got to have the house our parents spent 50 years getting. And is anybody surprised? Listen, is anybody surprised that we bow down to this idol and now we're paying the price for the mortgages and the housing problems that everybody had to have, and says, saying, you know what? Start small, work your way up, and pay cash. Is anybody surprised? We bow down to idols. Don't bow down. And in the 40s, it changes from the 40s, from possessions. It goes to power. It goes to a power thing. Who I am and my status, what do? I want to control. I want to control things. And you see people, they've got to be in control. And we see a society that's got to be in control. And God can't be in control. They can't be in control. Rules can't be in control. Everybody's right. Nobody's wrong. And we see that in the 40s. Don't define right and wrong for me. I will do what I want, when I want, how I want. And we see that in the 40s and then into the 50s. And I know I'm generalizing this. And here's the idolatry pyramid. It just keeps climbing. And in the 50s, it becomes prestige. Why? I have an image. You know how hard it is to lead someone to Christ in their 50s, kids? I love you guys because you're so open to Jesus. Listen, some of you that had shared about your moms and dads, it was so hard with me when I got saved. I was 19. And to tell my dad about Jesus, me and him are like this. Come on, Dad. At 50 years of age, you don't see very many 50-year-olds that'll walk in front of a group of people and come and bow down to God because there's an image. And what will people think if I walk forward at my age? What will they think I'm going through? What will they think? Men at 50, I'm not going to counseling for my marriage. What will people think? I can handle this myself. Power and prestige. Listen, we bow down to a 90-foot piece of gold. And we give up the very thing that God created us to be. If we get rid of a pride, and that's in there too, that's one of those peas in the idolatry pyramid. If we could get rid of that, we could do the right things. Young people, start now and learn not to bow. It'll change your lives. We do live, by the way, that 90-foot gold tower. We live by the golden rule. Is there a young person that can tell me what the golden rule is today? What's the golden rule? Yes. Thank you very much, Tamara. Do unto others as you'd have others do unto you. I'd like to think that's the golden rule, but that's not the golden rule today. The golden rule today is he who has the gold makes the rules. It's true. It blows my mind that the first place we go with cameras to get opinions on what's right and wrong is people with money. We're in my living room, so I can talk like this. This isn't a sermon. I'm not at church today. Young people, it really irks me and like no end to know that we're going to go to people in Hollywood or sports figures as if somehow their opinion is worthwhile when all they did was get thrusted a lot of money for acting and pretending to be someone as an actor or somebody that got money for putting a ball through a hoop or throwing it to a glove. Now, I love sports, but the idea that they have an opinion to make right and wrong, we live by the golden rule. We put microphones and we define what's right and wrong by those people. I thought Madonna was bad when she came out back when... And I know you guys weren't around when she came out. As a youth pastor, I was going, you got to be kidding. All these girls are dressing like Madonna. She's the worst thing that ever came out. And then everybody thought Britney was really cool, and all the girls' clothes got to be practically nothing. Girls, it just blew my mind, the idea that my daughter would even grow up in a society that would dress like that in public. That's something that needs to be in the bedroom behind closed doors for married couples. And we flaunt it all over television. And then we put a microphone and say, tell us your opinion because you have the gold. You make the rule. And what happened to the idea that the people who make the rules are the teachers, the educators, the policemen, the preachers, and the pastors, and the moms and the dads who understand what life's all about? Don't bow down. I don't care what society says. Now, I'll say this. I feel bad for a woman who's been thrust into it like Britney and all the things that were thrown into her face and the idea that her life is what it is because of the images of gold. Listen, every golden image, you won't find that 90-foot statue. Isn't that something? The Eiffel Tower's around. The Statue of Liberty's around. Whatever happened to a 90-foot tower of gold? When we build towers that are false, they will not stand. I feel bad for Hollywood people and sports figures who are thrust into the limelight and haven't got the sense as kids to handle what's being thrown their way. And we as parents, our generation, we handed it to them. And I say that with all my heart because it's in their textbooks, and it's being taught, and it's on their televisions, and it comes into our family room more than scripture and preachers do every day. Oh, we're in the living room. Why are you here? You're here for one reason, and it is the golden rule. She was right. You're here to love one another. You're here to make a difference. So stand up and make a difference. God's given you a bit of gold every day. You young people have been spending it with Pastor Kevin and myself this week and last week. God's given you $86,400 to spend every day. That's a lot of money. Every day you can spend it. At the stroke of midnight, it's gone. 86,400 seconds is what God has given you in a day. One day you won't have that to spend. One day they'll say, you're going to cash in. You're going to retire. But in the meantime, young people, know this, that when you spend it, listen, life is a coin. You can only spend it once. But once you spend it, it's gone. What are you spending your life investing in? $86,400. This week, you guys spend your money well. I heard it last night. I heard it Friday night. People were so excited. You got to be kidding. this is the most amazing thing. These kids put this, they could sing, they could dance, they could, these kids are that excited about church and doing something like this. Good job. Do that now with other people. Keep investing that kind of time and energy into other people and into God. And then the last thing that we have this morning, and I'm out of time. You guys are going to have to leave my living room. I got to go get my salsa and chips together for the Super Bowl. Why? Where did I come from? Why am I here? Where am I going when I die? That's the last question you have to ask yourself. Meshach, Shadrach, and Abednego, they answered that question, didn't they? They said it. And Ryan, you have that line in the play. When they bring him out and say, it's the gas chamber. Oh, by the way, it's the gas chamber if you don't bow down. And Meshach, Shadrach, and Abednego realize it's going to be fire if we don't bow down. Folks, I know you go through fire in your lives. Some of you are changing your finances. Some of you are trying to change your family and have godly homes. Some of you are trying to work with your kids. I know you're going through fires. We go through the same fires. And God said, if you don't bow down and do things the way the world does it, if you will just stand, if you will not bow down to that, I will honor you. And what was the result? There weren't three in the fire. There were four. I want you to know that when you want to ask the question, where am I going? You may be going, for some of you may be going to hell and back. But do you know in Psalm 139 it says, where can I go from your spirit? Where can I hide from you, God? If I go to the heavens, you are there. If I go to hell, you are there. And some of us have gone through hell, and we found God is there. God is there. God is with you. Young people, he says, can I go to the mountains and you are not there? Can I hide from you in the sea? And the answer is no. You can't go anywhere where God will not go. And I love the writer in Isaiah. He said, if you go through the fire, he will not let you get burned. If you go through the flood, you will not drown, for I will be with you. God will be with you in the fire and the flood. And Meshach, Shadrach, and Abednego is a great story where three boys who wouldn't bow down said, even if he doesn't save us, we're going to heaven. We know where we're going when we die. And Jesus shows up in the fire. He says, not today, boys. Not today. Today's a good day to stay alive. I want to show this king a little something about who I am. And I believe God wants to show who he is through your life if you'll just go through the fire. Go through the fire. Don't bow down. The only way I ever want to bow down is this. There is a time to bow down, young people. And it's this. If I'm going to stand before a king, and a king who has a robe with an insignia that says, I'm not just a king, I am the king of all kings, and I'm not just a lord, I'm the lord of all lords. And it says that right on his robe. I would bow down to that king, and I would bow before him. And I would say, now you are a king, you are my king, and whatever you say goes in my life. Whatever you say, if you say, my life is worth a fire, I'll go through the fire. If you say, my life is worth a flood, I'll go through the flood. But if you say, my life is going to be beyond both of those, I'll go through that. Whatever God has, I will bow my knee because he is a king. The hardest thing for us to do is bow before a king. We all bow before something. You just have to decide what's king of your life. Budweiser is not king of beers. Well, it may be king of beers, but not the king of my life. Dairy may be queen and burger may be king, but Jesus is the Lord of Lords and the king of my life. Young people, I want to say thanks for coming to my living room this morning. I want to, my daughter, some of you had some stuff. Jonathan, what do you, don't wave at me. Give me the ice back. Who else has my, where's it at? Did you drop it? Where is it? I gave you two, Curtis.
Yeah, I
can
find the thermostat.
Yeah. he couldn't find the thermostat. To stay solid in this world, you have to be around those who are solid. You have to be in an environment that's going to help you to stay solid. The problem with this is, and my daughter, who's 7 years old, discovered yesterday, as much as she tries to change her world, sometimes you can't. But to stay solid, you need to be around those who are like you and find an environment where you can grow and stay solid. Because the question we asked at the very beginning is Christianity invading the world, or is the world invading Christianity? Does your culture change you, or do you change your culture? Are you solid for God? Thanks for coming to the living room. Let's pray.